Hi, everybody. This is the Rambled Redhead Show, and thank you for listening. And this is part three of our interview with Tim and Gene. And now we have the luxury of talking with Gene. And again, we're going to hear his story about, but not only his life, but also how he met Tim and how they've been able to have a very long and happy relationship together. And so what I'd like to do is welcome Gene to the show. Hey, Gene.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Great.
How are you?
I'm doing really good, thank you, and I'm thrilled to be doing this.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad you could. And I was just wondering if you could tell our audience a little bit about yourself, how old you are, and a little bit of the background now.
Sure. Okay. I'm 53, going on 17 or 18, and I'm a native New Yorker, and proud of it. And when I started to first realize that I was gay, I think probably in early junior high school I started to realize I was different. But here we get to the generational thing. Mm-hmm. Back then there was no such thing as gay.
Right.
You know, I mean, I grew up on Long Island just outside New York City. And as was unfortunately the case with so many people, I spent years agonizing over the absolute certainty that I must be the only one in the world.
Right.
And it wasn't until late in high school that I became aware that there were other people like me, and that began my relationship with the city of New York. I went to college after high school, went to college in New York City, mm-hmm. and found Greenwich Village, which was like Nirvana. It was incredible. It was like stumbling on a festival celebrating your favorite thing, and it was such an important emotional event too. I mean, I was still terrified to go near the whole issue of what it meant, because I knew what everybody said, I knew how everybody acted, I knew that gay was this horrible, terrible thing, and then all of a sudden I find myself in an environment where it's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. It was probably a lifesaver, to be honest with you, because I had such negative feelings about myself. I mean, there was no question of any support from my family or anything. I was born and raised into one of those families where sex didn't exist. My parents never discussed it. Everybody knew it was there, but it was such a negative thing, at least in terms of the attitude our parents set, and frankly the rest of our larger family.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, one brother and two sisters.
Are they older or younger?
My brother's 2 years older than me. I have a sister 2 years younger and a sister 12 years younger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So, did you come out to them, and what age did that happen?
My parents were divorced when I was in about sixth grade, and I stayed with, all of the children stayed with our mom, and we didn't see much of dad for years at a time. And my mother and stepfather found out that I was gay when I was 16, because I was having a little thing going with the newspaper boy who was the same age that I was, and they became aware of that. And it was horrible. It was terribly ugly. My stepfather beat me, and although you can get over these kind of things, you never forget it. My mother's first words to me were, "Oh, son, never look at me again."
Oh, great.
Well, the good news is that later in life, when she finally had to confront the fact that I was going to be who I was, regardless of what anybody thought, we ended up with a relationship that was absolutely wonderful. And Tim and I think mom passed away a few years ago. I think she went through the last part of her life in the firm conviction that we had the best marriage of all of her kids. It's certainly the most durable of them. We've been together for 23 years.
Wow. So definitely a big transformation there.
Yeah. A real eye-opener. I mean, it even got to the point where mom lived in the last part of her life, she lived in the mountains in the western part of North Carolina. And because because of a trip she and her husband took to the Cowpens battlefield. That's a Revolutionary War battlefield. They happened to be there when the crew of the USS Cowpens was there preparing for their commissioning ceremony, which was going to take place at the battlefield. And she was befriended by, she was befriended by some of the crew members, and she befriended some of the crew members, and she ended up inviting some of them back to her home for a barbecue, and she told me later that they ended up talking, and she told them that her son was gay and he was in the Navy, and I think the truth of the matter was she picked the guys in the crew that she thought might be gay and invited them home for a meal.
Wow.
Yeah, she really became something extraordinary on the whole issue. She had very strong feelings on the subject. When she had to confront what it was all really about, she became a firm advocate for the rights of gay people and wouldn't hesitate to speak out, even in the tiniest, most conservative little communities.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a great mom and a dear friend.
That's good. I mean, I'm very glad that you had that, you know, opportunity, because as you know, a lot of, you know, unfortunately, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender people who do come out, and unfortunately they don't get the acceptance from their parents, and so it's really important for younger people who are listening to the show, or really anybody who's listening to the show, to understand that people can change, and people's attitudes can change, and in fact, I this is the first time I'm saying this to anybody, but I was doing some search on the internet this weekend, and I came across some other websites or blogs on gay issues, and in fact I came across this one that was really heartbreaking, because what it is there was this couple that had a gay son, and they talked about how at the beginning, because they were very religious, and they were basically, you know, going with what they taught, what they grew up with about, you know, gays being wrong. And what they did is, after some time of, you know, talking with their son, talking with their pastor, talking with other people in the community, like PFLAG and things like that, mm-hmm. that they were able to finally realize that, hey, their son is their son, and he happens to be gay, and that there's nothing wrong with him as a person for being gay. And so what they did is they created a website that teaches nothing but family acceptance. And so it was just amazing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so what I did is I emailed them this weekend, and I told them that I really enjoyed their website and what they had to offer, and I asked them if they would be interested in talking to me on my show. And
I hope you get that opportunity. It's such an important message.
And they wrote back and they said they're very excited about talking to me. So
that's wonderful. That's one that I want to hear.
So that's one of the things I love about doing this show, and also I love about you know, the fact that you can communicate with people so quickly with email, and then be able to get them on the phone and just hear their story. So again, just so people know, the only reason that I'm even talking with Tim and Gene today is because of Tim had made a post on gay.com on the day of Veterans Day, and he had talked about, they had an article about gays in the military, and he had written you know, several paragraphs about his life and what had happened, and I had emailed him, you know, really not expecting anybody to reply, and I've got several responses. In fact, I talked with a gentleman Saturday, and we're going to be posting his show up very soon. And then I had another one that I was supposed to talk to this evening, so I'm looking forward to hearing his story. And so, I mean, it's just really amazing how all this fell together. So, again, Gene, I want you to thank Tim and you for doing this.
I mean, it's so important to do this kind of thing. You know how sometimes people can be talking about something and they say, well, we don't have any choice in the matter. There's no such thing as a situation where you don't have a choice. There's always a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes one of the options may seem so horrible that you wouldn't go near it for any reason whatsoever. In terms of dealing with the issue of acceptance of gay people in our society, we have a choice. We can continue to communicate. There's even been studies done on the subject of how people come around people with anti-gay attitudes, with negative attitudes, they begin to come around when they begin to realize that they know someone who is gay.
Yep.
And so being out is risky in a lot of respects. I mean, apparently we've made enough progress that there are a lot of people who say that they face no great risk in being out in today's society. But risks still do exist for some people. We have to keep doing what we're doing to normalize the situation.
Yeah, I mean,
and to let parents know, you know, it's no big issue if your kid is GLBT.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just add on to that, is that my cousin, she is gay or lesbian, and what happened was when she was going to college, she had a very, very, you know, difficult time accepting it, and see, her mom and dad are very religious, and she was absolutely petrified to coming out to them. And see, the ironic thing is that when I talked with her about it, of course, after the fact, but the thing was so amazing is that at the time, she honestly thought that her father was going to be okay with it, her mother was going to be okay with it, but she thought her father was going to have the issue. And what ended up happening is, like, just before she finally decided to come out, she was in college and she was having a very tough time, and she actually made the comment to her father about how she had a friend that she knew that was gay. And the father at the time had said, "Oh, well, they're just sick in the head. They should just kill themselves." And so my cousin, of course, was devastated because she was, of course, really talking about herself, but she wanted to get her impression of what her father would do. And so what happened was that very next 6 months, she went into a severe depression, and it got so bad that actually she ended up having her friends call her parents and say, "Hey, you need to get down here. You know, she needs help." And then that's when my cousin finally, you know, came out and told them. But the thing was is that after she did that, her mother was, "You're my daughter, I love you no matter what." And then her father, realizing what he had said 6 months prior and realizing that it really was her, you know, did a complete 360 degrees, and he said to her, "If I would have known, or if you'd have done anything to yourself because of what I said, I never would have forgiven myself." And then a few years later, my cousin ended up meeting her partner, and they had a commitment ceremony. And what my cousin and her partner had no idea was that her father ended up getting up and speaking in front of everybody, and he wrote this very, unfortunately I wasn't able to be there, but he wrote this very beautiful thing for them, where he went on and on about how, you know, that he not only had a daughter, but he gained a new daughter because of the ceremony, and that he loved them no matter what, and that so, I mean, it was just a very emotional thing for
sure.
In that very short time. And it was such a big transformation for him because, obviously, you know, he grew up in a small town. He grew up under the mentality that it was wrong. And, you know, and again, he's in that age group. It was, you know, that's how it was looked at. And this was in the early 80s. So it was just amazing how he quickly changed, and because he found out that his daughter was gay. So it's just amazing how, you know, like you said, that once people know about someone, then they do change their mindset. And
the whole question of coming out is fraught with confusion and conflict, or at least potential conflict. I think there's some important things to think about, though. When you think about the amount of energy that any one of us spent keeping ourselves in the closet, however long we were in the closet, imagine what one could have done with that energy in a more productive way.
Yeah.
We're making a great deal of progress remaking a world in which we can have the kind of happy endings that your cousin talked about. The next step after that is to focus on creating a world where we can have happy beginnings.
Exactly.
Where from the get-go, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Or it's even celebrated as part of the diversity of life, because that's really what it ought to be about. I mean, if everybody was vanilla and there was no chocolate, it'd be a pretty boring world.
Yep.
And I don't think that's the Creator's intention.
No.
I think the Creator's intention is that we might come to the point where we realize we have some things to celebrate in our diversity.
Yep.
I think it dishonors the Creator to fail to do that.
Yep.
And as far as the young people coming out, I think that we need to continue to give them every bit of support we can. But it isn't just young people. One of the most remarkable experiences of the years that I spent heavily involved in the question of gay people in the military and the gay veterans organizations was the number of older people who I watched in the process of coming out. After decades and decades of life in the closet, many people, including, you know, marriage and children,
mm-hmm.
Finally approaching their true selves and finding a means of embracing that and being able to talk in their 70s and 80s and 90s about how it opened up a whole new life to them. I mean, imagine being in your 90s and talking about having come out and found a whole new life. This is a person in their 90s. They're not supposed to be talking about a whole new life. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful. And we have a lot of work yet to do, but I think that at times we should take time to celebrate the work that we've accomplished, too. There was a time, I think that you and I have spent a little bit of time talking about the Point Foundation, which reaches out to young people who have had a hard time and provides assistance for them to go off and finish their schooling and begin to have their lives.
Yep.
That didn't exist 10 years ago.
No, it's only 3 years old.
Right. That's a huge step. There's even been a lot of reluctance in the gay community, especially apparently. I mean, I'm no expert, but it seems to me as though there's been a lot of reluctance on the part of the gay male community to step up on the question of young gay people because some of the right-wing fanatics and the wackos would start screaming about how they're trying to recruit young people and things like that. Well, the 9 and 10 and 12 and 15-year-olds are watching it on TV. They're seeing gay characters. They're seeing gay positive statements. They're seeing acceptance all over the place, even if they're in a state of questioning. You know, I mean, there is such a thing as being at such a young age that you really don't know, but you might have questions. I think that we need to get past our own fears about people screaming at us and reach back to these young people who are reaching out. And we have a lot of situations that still need to be addressed. The situation for those wonderful people who volunteer their gifts of service to the nation in the military is the worst it's ever been.
Yep.
We've got an awful lot of work to do.
Well, I want to just say one more thing, and then I'd like...
Sure.
I mean, we're... In a way, we're getting a little. I mean, I love what we're saying, and I love what we're talking about. But I'd like to continue that talk, but I want to learn more about you because obviously that's the point of this interview. I love what we've talked about so far. I mean, it's really, really good. But the one thing I wanted to say that kind of adding to what you just said about how younger kids these days are able to see a lot of things like on television. About gays and lesbians and, you know, being accepting. Because I wanted to tell you about, and I'm going to find out the name of it, but there was a documentary that was done, and there was a school that what they did is they had a certain number of teachers from the grades like 4th to 6th grade talk about the gay and lesbian, you know, population. And the thing that was amazing is that I mean, these are really young kids, and they asked them, well, what do you think about... a man and a man being together. And this one little boy got up and he said, and I wish I'll have to get the sound bite and I'll play it on another show, but one of the things he says, well, I don't see what's wrong with that. It's like they were like a mommy and daddy, and as long as they love each other, what's the difference? And this was a young kid, like maybe, you know, 11, 12 years old that, you know, and it was just really amazing. And,
you can find some real wisdom in the mouth of young people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that we can learn from the fact that they haven't overcomplicated things yet. Yeah, you know, if people want to have a committed relationship, what difference does it make what gender they are?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I have yet, in in 53 years of listening, I have yet to hear a negative answer to that question that made any sense at all.
Yep.
So.
Okay. Well, going back to your story then, I just want to do a little flashback here. But so I was just wondering, you mentioned that you're a young age when you realized that you were gay.
I realized I was different.
Yeah.
I didn't have a name to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
So and then when I was in high school, I had a name to put on it, and it was horrible. It was queer or faggot.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of them. I was the kind of guy that other guys got together on Friday night to go downtown to beat up.
Wow.
Now, that didn't happen to me because I kept my secret pretty well, but I knew that's what I was. It even affected my ability to have friendships in school and things like that, because I knew there was this secret me, and everybody would be horrified if they knew, and...
Mm-hmm.
I stayed pretty much off by myself. I didn't really begin to come out into life in any respect until I went off to college.
Mm-hmm.
And then the closet door thundered down, and there I was in all my glory.
So when was the first time you were with a man?
Actually, I messed around as a kid. In junior high, I messed around with other guys in junior high, but I didn't, I was, having come from one of those sexless families, I didn't even know that it was sex, no less the wrong kind of sex.
Wow.
It was just something we did playing around somewhere out in the woods or something like that. The first time that I ever really had an experience that wasn't just a mechanical biological function was when I was in college, when I realized, you know what, there are other people who are interested in this, and they can say so, and they don't wake up feeling like they need to kill themselves the next morning.
Right.
So
how old were you then when that happened?
18.
And how did you meet him?
Going to Greenwich Village. You know, it was so funny. I went to college in New York City, and I was 18. I graduated high school at 17, so I was in college when I was 18. I heard about Greenwich Village, and I went there, and I was terrified to be there, but I was even more scared to leave. I knew it's here. I just need to find it. I mean, I had seen things said in magazines and in the newspapers. And when you grow up on the island, you hear things about the city, this and that and the other. And so I didn't know where to go. But then I started looking, and I realized, you know what, it's right in front of me. I mean, there are gay people walking around the streets as gay people. And I just started going there. I ended up hanging around an ice cream parlor, actually. And I met a guy one day, and we had sex.
Wow.
And it was unbelievable. I was terrified because it was so great.
Yeah.
I mean, I was still full of this programming that everything about it is supposed to be horrible, negative, and you're going to be damned and burn in hell. And I kept trying to figure out what's wrong. This is all so good.
Mm-hmm.
It took a bit of getting used to.
Yeah.
I thank God that I did.
Did you? Was it a one-time thing, or did you see him again later? Or
yeah, we ended up going out for a while.
Oh wow! How long were you together?
Oh, I think about just a matter of about 9 or 10 months.
Yeah.
I mean, we were so young and full of conflict on that and other issues. That's a pretty raw age, 18.
Yeah, it is.
It's an in-between time. Nobody wants to let you be a real adult yet, but you can't get away with being a kid any longer.
Right.
So.
So what? Okay. So as your college progressed, did you? I mean, when did? So when? What was the age when you did come out to like a friend or a family member? Then
I would say 19. I mean, I had already been outed in terms of my family.
Oh, that's right, because you were a little kid.
Because so. My mother found out about me.
Right.
And that was at at that point, still a completely negative experience, and it wasn't something that was discussed. In fact, I had very little contact with my family at that point.
Okay. Did you have a lot of, did you start to develop a lot of gay friends then?
No. I ended up meeting some other gay people at college, and we basically formed what amounts to a little underground gay society there at Wagner College on Staten Island, which at that point was a Lutheran college, and I was studying for the Lutheran ministry, a career which was cut short pretty quickly in my senior year when I had an honest conversation with the bishop about my personal life. I made some gay friends at Wagner, and we were all still deep closet because most of us were also studying to be ministers, and you certainly couldn't come out in that environment. And it was still early in the 70s, and being out was a pretty brave thing to do. But we were out with each other, and it was wonderful.
So I'm sure you, because of that reason, you probably developed some really good friendships over the time, right?
Yes. The flip side of that coin is that during the worst part of the AIDS epidemic, I lost all of them but one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have one old friend left.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you known him then?
Since 1971.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, speaking of that topic, you and I talked yesterday about your one friend that I was just wondering, would you mind sharing that story? Because I think it's really a good one, if you want to, that is.
You mean the one who was in the book?
Yes.
Yes, he's one of the ones who was lost. His name was Ricky, and he was an orphan. He was being raised by his aunt and uncle in a tremendously loving, very close Italian family in Brooklyn. And Ricky and I ended up meeting each other in the college choir, and we also were roommates for a while. And Ricky sort of became the little brother that I never had. Very quiet, very reticent, very not assertive, but the sweetest guy in the world. And we went through college together. We sang our hearts out in college choir. We cried on each other's shoulder about guys that we loved who didn't love us back, like that. And I think that was part of the joy of the relationship, because gay people didn't get to do that. You didn't get to go through normal dating experiences and stuff like that. Especially not in high school, not in the 1970s. I guess that's changed to some extent today. But that was just a wonderful thing to have, that kind of a friendship with Ricky. And after college, I dropped out of college to go into the Navy, and he finished college and taught school for a couple of years, and then decided he wanted to go to work for the airlines, where he became first a flight attendant and then a supervisor until his life was taken by AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after he died, in the mid-80s, I don't know that a lot of people still do it, but back then there was a much stronger push to make a quilt for the Names Project Memorial Quilt, to make a panel to right. memorialize a friend. And we lived in Vermont at the time. I made a panel for Ricky. It was sort of a cross-stitch kind of panel, and sent it in, and I sent in a little letter, as they asked each person to do, a little letter about who Ricky was mm-hmm. and why I wanted him to be remembered. And about a year later, I got a letter from them asking me, informing me they were going to publish a book about the Names Project quilt, and they wanted to feature two things, photographs of quilt blocks and transcriptions of the letters that people sent in about people who they were memorializing on the quilt blocks they submitted. and they asked me if they could use what I wrote about Ricky as part of the introduction for the book.
Now, do you have that book with you there?
Yes. You want me to read that to you?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you would share, because I thought it was really beautiful, and if you don't mind, I would love
to. I don't mind at all. I love the thought of Ricky being remembered.
Yes.
Hang on, let me just turn to that page.
Oh, sure. No problem.
Okay.
And I just want to let our listeners know while he's getting the book that I'm going to be putting a link for the named project on my website. So if you'd like to take a look at it, and if you'd like to maybe make a donation to check out the quote. And I did look at the website today, and I just want to let you know that they are having exhibits of the quilt all over the country. And I think there's like five or six states that are going to be having exhibits in the next month or two, so you might want to check out that website and see if it's going to be in your local area. And if it is, you know, please go and look at it and remember these great people like Ricky. So, do you by chance have the book now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, if you could please read that for me, I'd appreciate it.
I sure would. I'll just read it verbatim. Ricky Riccobono was really one of the great kind souls of the earth, writes a friend. No, you probably won't recognize his name. He never appeared on the cover of Time, never had dinner at the White House, and didn't even have a Rotary Club luncheon in his honor. All he had, which made him a very wealthy man, was the deep abiding love of many, many dear friends. In January 1987, Ricky Riccobono died of AIDS. After dinner one night, two of his friends sat around a dining room in Barre, Vermont, to make a cloth memorial spelling out Ricky's name with colored markers in a cross-stitch design. When it was done, the fabric banner was mailed off to the Names Project in San Francisco's Castro District. There it joined 3,000 other panels being sewn together in one enormous quilt. And that begins the introduction to the book.
Wow. And just also let our younger listeners know, too, is that there is also a Academy Award-winning documentary about the AIDS quilt. And if you'd like to, you know, find out more about that, again, it should be on the website. And I believe they have the DVD available. And there's other books and other things that you can do that you can help support this project. And, again, if it's in your area, please go and support it and make a contribution if you can, because, you know, and so you can help immortalize, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the great people like Ricky. And And I think it'll be awesome. So,
there were two experiences in my life that will stay with me forever as the most moving events I ever attended. One was the last time the quilt was displayed in its entirety. It took up almost the entire mall in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And the other was when we were able to get 24 quilt blocks to display in Montpelier, Vermont, when Tim and I lived in Vermont. Obviously a much smaller display, but it was a really moving experience to have a small portion of the quilt with us. And we even were able to organize in this tiny little capital city of the tiny little but wonderful state of Vermont a citywide bell ringing. And it was the first time, as the quilt was opened that morning, when all the city bells rang, it was the first time they had done that since the end of World War II.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it evokes that kind of motivation to see it, and it's just amazing. The sad thing is, unfortunately, the quilt continues to grow.
Yes.
But it's an important memorial, and it was even nominated for the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, I think that a lot of people have, unfortunately, seemed to allow the quilt to recede in their memory, and it's a remarkable experience that we shouldn't let go of.
Right.
There's a lot of strength there.
Yes.
There really is. It's an important life-affirming thing.
Yeah, and I think it's like any other major part of history, is that you have to remember the past in order to be able to move on for your future. So I can't even put into words how I just wish people would stand up and really and do what they can to help. And so I'm hoping the younger people that are listening to the show,
yeah,
I'm hoping that they'll, get get involved and look into this and see what they can do and be a part of it and help remember all these people, because
I'm sure that we all look forward to the day when AIDS is a bad memory.
Mm-hmm.
The sad truth is that it's still a presence among us, and what positive things we can find to motivate us to keep up the fight deserve our respect and our attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Gene, we're past the 30-minute mark. It's actually 35, so I'm going to go ahead and stop at this moment, but just hold on 1 second. Okay, everybody who's listening to the show, I just want to let you know this was the conclusion of part 3 of the interview with Tim and Gene, and I will be continuing in a few moments. But if you'd like to email me, you can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com. You can also check out the website, which again is rambleredhead.blogspot.com. And if you'd like to email any information to Tim or to Gene about the show or anything that we've talked about, please do so, and I'll be happy to forward the information to them. And again, I'll be putting up a link for the NAMES Project as well as the, some other sites that you can go to get more information on this. So we'll conclude today, and I thank you for listening. And as Gene so eloquently said, as I said in one of the other shows, if you have to love anybody, remember to love yourself. So I'm signing off on this episode. We'll have part 2 with Gene in just a moment.